On this episode, we discuss After Earth, about a planet destroyed by the power of nepotism. Hey everyone, and welcome to the Flophouse. I'm Dan McCoy.
That was Dan McCoy, and I'm Stuart Wellington.
And that was Stuart Wellington and Dan McCoy, and I'm Elliot Kalin.
And that was Stuart Wellington and Elliot Kalin and Dan McCoy, and I'm Dan McCoy.
Well, good night, everybody.
See you next.
This was the Flophouse podcast.
The Flophouse. I was a little late on that one.
Yeah.
So, Dan, what do we do on the Flophouse?
It's a podcast.
Okay.
So what do we do on
you like
it?
Listen
we,
to it.
Thanks for establishing what we already know, dumb shit. I'm sorry. That was totally uncalled for. Wow. Dan, what do we do on the Flophouse?
Dumb shit.
We watch a bad movie. That happens prior to the taping.
Yes.
And during the taping, the part that you're listening to now, we discuss that bad movie.
So they're listening to something we taped at a distant past, but they're listening to it now.
Yeah,
much like the light from a star.
After Earth. What? After Earth?
Is that sounds like the title of the movie we watched.
Oh, boy. That's because it is.
Well.
Oh, boy, indeed. We watched the movie called After Earth.
We watched a movie called Afterbirth. Story of a placenta.
In a way.
Wanted to make it in the big city.
As a dancer.
It was disgusting.
It's called Babe 2 Placenta in the Big City.
It just lays there. It lays there on the stage.
Hey, quit you crying, kid. You want to grow up?
Is that the bulldog that, that befriends him?
The cigar-smoking bulldog that befriends the fetus.
Yeah. It's not a fetus, it's a placenta.
Oh, now that's terrible.
They're very
Stuart.
Different.
Sure.
This is just the refuse.
I don't know how you got on the list of top 10 OBGYNs in the country with that kind of mistaken knowledge. Exactly. So, Dan, After Earth was the movie we watched, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. This is an M. Night Shyamalan joint.
Oh, man, number three.
We were discussing. This is the third movie we watched that was directed by him.
And we've also watched one produced by him.
So Elevator.
Like
Elevator. So it's like
Elevator.
Delaware?
Evil Lift. So it's like we watched 3.5 M. Night Shyamalan movies.
Mm-hmm. That's a terrible sitcom.
Sure. 3.5 M. Night
Yeah.
Stars M. Night Shyamalan, another M. Night Shyamalan.
He wasn't in this one.
Another M. Night Shyamalan, and then half of an M. Night Shyamalan.
So M. Night Shyamalan's in most of his movies, right?
I don't know about that.
He's in most of them.
He's not in The Happening.
He isn't?
He's not in The Sixth Sense.
He's
got to be in The Sixth Sense.
I think
Sense.
He is in The Sixth Sense, but I can't remember.
He's a real Alfred Hitchcock.
Is he in Unbreakable?
Yeah. Wait, hold on. I'm going to look it up.
He's the doctor that, explains to her that her kid's fucking bones are made of glass or some shit.
There's no way to
Or explains to Unbreakable that he's Unbreakable.
No, I think it's the other way around. He's like the doctor in the beginning.
Hold on. Actor, filmography. He was in The Happening.
Okay.
He was in Lady in the Water. He was in The Village. He was in Signs. He was in Unbreakable. He was in The Sixth Sense.
Oh, who was he in The Sixth Sense?
He was the Ursa, a alien that tracks people by fear.
No,
smells.
That's in
it
After
was Dr. Hill.
Jonah Hill.
Everyone's favorite character from that movie, Dr. Hill. We can all remember his catchphrase, hey, there's a bunch of spook-em-ups around here.
His catchphrase, who ordered the ghosts?
Yep.
So After Earth, but it wasn't advertised as a directed by M. Shyamalan movie. It was advertised
as they've caught on that that's box office poison.
It was advertised as a Will Smith, Jaden Smith box office smash. A tentpole film much like The Pursuit of Happiness, except with more spaceships and mumbly language in a future accent that's hard to understand at times.
Mm-hmm. But with a proper spelling of happiness.
And you probably saw trailers for this along with trailers to Oblivion. They are not the same movie.
No.
Yeah.
Even though they look very similar.
I get the feeling that I would enjoy Oblivion more.
They're also not the same as Elysium, even though those trailers looked kind of similar.
Yeah, it's got a robot suit, I think.
And the costumes are not the same as Game of Thrones, even though they look very similar.
Yeah, there's a lot of doublets.
A lot of slashed leather doublets.
Leather doublets.
Stuart,
timeless.
Were you going to open a new clothing line that's mostly leather doublets?
Stuart slash leather doublets. You've heard of slash fiction. Now you want something that isn't a story. It's a piece of clothing. Stuart slash leather
That's
doublets.
That's a pretty long slogan.
Kind of clunky tagline. How about you've heard of slash fiction, these are the real thing.
No, sure. That doesn't make sense, though.
Well, that they're real.
How about this? Doublets, doublets, doublets.
Why settle for just one when you could double it?
Exactly.
So anyway, Stuart Wellington / Leather Doublets, soon to be in a gaming or cosplay store near you, in case you want to dress up like a caveman in the year 1500 BC, which is not when cavemen were around, or a spaceman in the year 4000 AD.
You
want to
look like a Star Trek guy on the set of next year's Game of Thrones spinoff?
Yep.
What's next year's Game of Thrones? It's called Star Trek of Thrones?
Yep. It's a prequel.
So let's talk about it. This movie is set in the future after Earth.
Yeah.
We open with an explosion on a spaceship. Will Smith and Jaden Smith are in trouble. Jaden Smith is lying hurt in a forest somewhere. And I was like, you know what? This jumped into the action really fast. Like, that's not bad. Mm-hmm. Then the voiceover started.
Like a slap in the face.
Like being hit with a wet fish.
And it's not just any voiceover. It's Jaden Smith doing a voiceover in this like mumbly patois future language they use.
And now it's very. I want us to try to establish some ground rules because Jaden Smith is a teenager.
Mm-hmm.
Sure. He's a kid. He's a minor. Let's not hit him too hard. But let's just say off the top of the bat, he is totally without charisma or chops.
I refuse to play by your rules.
I just feel like we should be fair to someone who is not a legal adult.
Well, right. When I make fun of him for his inability to pronounce words in this movie, it's not his fault. It's the director's choice or whoever's choice
I
to make
it. I think it is some kind of future accent.
It
was hard to tell. Like, everyone had like this weird future patois like that we couldn't
understand.
Let's
just say one thing.
It was mumbly.
It was not patois.
Okay.
No.
A patois to me involves like a pidgin language of some kind.
Mm-hmm.
They were not using made up words.
They were just pronouncing things.
They were just pronouncing things as if they were from like a weird part of Baltimore or Philadelphia.
Yeah, where people walk where they around just with stuff in their mouth.
Yeah, where everyone has gravel in their mouths and they drop a lot of letters from their pronunciations.
Yeah, but I couldn't. I honestly could not tell a lot of the time whether it was the director's fault or whether Jaden Smith, as an inexperienced actor, just wasn't articulating as well as he should.
I think it's
An interesting accent that as soon as the characters become really emotional, they just forget about the accent entirely.
It's something I call Keanu Reeves syndrome.
Yeah.
He could be from the South in a movie. He could be English. As soon as something big happens, he just sounds like a California surfer dude. Okay, so After Earth. Should we talk about the plot briefly?
Yeah.
There's not a lot of story in the movie, but there's enough. So in voiceover, it's explained to us that environmental cataclysm, as Wikipedia describes it, has made the Earth uninhabitable, and humans have gone off and colonized space, especially a new world called Nova Prime.
Yeah, which, all stuff we don't really need to know, we could have assumed.
Wait, there's even more we need to know. We don't need to know. 1,000 years after that, the United Ranger Corps, which is basically just a bunch of soldiers, you know, it's like the army, led by, I guess, Will Smith's character, General Cypher Rage.
That's
right.
That's an awesome name.
His first name is Cypher, and his last name is Rage.
Now, Rage is spelled slightly differently.
It has an I in it.
Yeah.
But otherwise, his name still sounds ridiculous. It sounds like a 14-year-old's idea for what his stage name is going to be when his metal band when his metal band Bone Sex takes off.
It's like M. Night Shyamalan was sifting through George Lucas's trash can and found
the name Sypho Diaz and was like, this isn't dumb enough. Let's make it Cypher Rage.
Yeah.
Cypher Rage does sound like a Terminator knockoff that you would have seen like in your video store in like 1996.
He's the hard-boiled space detective who hunts down Elans Lee's Bago or whatever.
And everyone has like little pieces of metal glued to their face. Cypher Rage.
Mm-hmm.
And everyone lives on the internet somehow. But anyway, there's aliens who attack humans.
Yeah.
And to do this, they breed a monster called an Ursa, which is a blind, you know, basically kind of cat monster thing.
Yeah, it's like
dealie.
I don't know. It looks like
not a bear, right?
It's not a bear. It looks, if anything, it looks like the kind of animals that were in Wayne Barlow's book Expedition, if anyone's seen that.
It's got a bit of a, I don't know, like the bugs from Starship Troopers look to it a bit.
Yeah, maybe. But there's a little bit of like the monsters from Cowboys and Aliens. It's like a big, bald, naked mole rat that's huge and it's got big teeth and no eyes and like spikes that it impales
sharp,
people with.
Sharp, crabby hands.
And it loves to impale people on tree branches. Mm-hmm. Like, that's its serial killer M.O., is that it impales people on tree branches.
It looks kind of like an attempt to be a scarier version of one of the monsters from, I think it's Spirited Away.
Okay.
The thing with all the arms and, like, a big fat body.
I guess so. It looks, I can see that. It's like a really low-rent imitation of, like, a Guillermo del Toro monster in some ways.
Yeah, but the point is,
It's like a bad Guy Davis design for BPRD, where Guy Davis would be like, this isn't so good, and throw it away.
It doesn't matter so much what it looks like, but what matters is what it does, which is it senses fear.
It senses fear by smelling fear pheromones that are emitted by people when they see this hella monster coming towards them. And so Cypher has learned how to, and taught the Rangers to, suppress their fear pheromones, because as he says, danger is real, but fear is a choice. And so the monster can't smell them, and it is invisible to the monster. Yeah. This is called ghosting. It seems there's a ghost in the machine, and the ghost name is Cypher Rage.
Now, wait a minute. So if it... So how does it like go around the woods and stuff? Does it smell the fear of the trees?
Yeah, it just bumps into shit all the time.
Yeah, well,
because it does like things to make people freaked out by like taking people it kills and sticks their dead bodies on trees.
Yeah, I don't.
That's called the Ursa signature.
It has a tree sense. It has a tree sense. Yeah, there is a part where they're seeing if this Ursa is around, and there's a computer that detects whether the Ursa signature is located, and it basically just means, are there any dead things stuck on trees? If so, then yes, it's an Ursa. But Jaden Smith plays Cypher's son named Katai Rage, who is in Ranger Cadet School and is the fastest runner of the group, as we learn in his opening scene. But unfortunately, he's good in exercises, but in the field, he falls apart. He still feels fear, and he is not promoted to Ranger Cadet.
Which seems to be like the key skill you need to be a ranger, right?
Because it's the only way to ghost.
You gotta ghost around, man.
Yeah, come on. So the movie Ghost was about not being able to be seen by an Ursa.
It's about how Patrick Swayze, could go around and tell that evil guy in the subway, played by what's his face,
Schiavelli.
Yeah, Vincent Schiavelli ruined his career as a ghoster by teaching him how to kick cans around.
Yep, and the only thing that could stop Ursas was pottery-based romance. Yep.
Speaking of kicking cans, our hero throws a lot of tantrums in this movie.
He certainly does. It feels like every other scene has Jaden Smith smashing something or getting mad and crying or
and complaining about shouting to the skies. Yeah,
I should be a ranger. Anyway, his dad is coming home for the first time in years.
His dad, Cypher Rage.
Cypher Rage, who's like a hero to everybody. And he has to break the news to him that he didn't make it to ranger school. Cypher Rage goes, they have an argument like dads and sons do.
Over dinner. So they made it kind of realistic.
Yeah, where they're eating with their three-pronged space chopsticks. Because it's the future. And now here's the interesting thing. So much more work seems to have been put into the design of this movie than anything else. And they live in this future that's very like white and organic. And
it's made out of linen.
And made out of flowing linen sheets and bamboo. It's this weirdly like hippie-ish future.
It's not organic enough for it to be like a Cronenberg future.
No, it's not like they're living in the guts of a giant building animal.
Also, like,
they don't like grow guns made out of pulsing organs or anything.
But if they did.
But it's all very soft. It feels like this is what this, if women ruled the world, maybe this is what the future would look like. No hard edges.
If Bed Bath & Beyond invented a future.
Well, yeah, that's mainly it, too. It's a future where they chose, they had a scented soap, and they said, how do we design an entire civilization around this?
But also, as I said during the movie, like, I feel like in a lot of futures, like, I guess in the future, people don't have stuff anymore, because everything is so, like, empty. Like,
everyone's
people's apartments are
minimal
like,
living, you know? It's the small living movement.
Yeah. They're all Buddhists.
That thing about owning 100 objects and keeping it that way, that's the law in the future of After Earth.
What a dystopian horror.
It's a dystopian future where people are not allowed to own too much stuff.
Can one of them be a double-ended blade staff?
It has to be, because that's the only way you're going to fight an Ursa, because guns apparently don't exist anymore.
Yeah. Sure, which would be...
We never see one, ever.
You would totally want a gun, because then you could be way far away. It couldn't smell your fear, and you could fucking blast it.
Yeah, come on, just shoot it up. Anyway.
Like a missile launcher.
It's the only way to be sure.
So anyway, Cypher and Katai have a fight, and Cypher tells his wife, I'm going to retire after this next mission where I'm going to some planet somewhere to deliver a big thing. And she says, your son needs a father, so he agrees to take his son Katai with him on this mission.
Doesn't he have plenty of time after he retires to spend time with his stupid son?
You'd think so, but apparently they need to do it right now.
Yeah.
So they go on this mission, and Katai is a total crybaby wuss. Everything makes him upset, whether it's sitting in a chair or walking up to a big asteroid egg where there's an Ursa inside of it.
Yeah, he walks into this area, like... He walks into this area that has a big sign that says hazardous area only, like what is it?
Rangers only, no Jaden Smiths allowed.
Basically.
And he's like, rules don't apply to me.
I'm the son of the star.
Well, that's the thing. Like,
I am the star.
That's the point I made during the movie, which was just like, yeah, sure, Jaden Smith, whatever, he's a kid, don't want to make too much fun of him, but you do have to make his character not seem like an entitled kid if we know that Jaden Smith is the guy. Like,
he's the son of
the son of Will
star.
Smith, yeah. Huge movie star who's making this movie basically to propel Jaden Smith into stardom. Like, don't make him then like the kind of kid who's like, whatever, signs don't apply to me, I'm going in here. You know, like,
so you're saying he already has strikes against him.
Yeah.
To get, like, if they just pick some random kid, like a real Jake Lloyd off the street.
yeah, you know, a future like, star like Jake Lloyd. Well, it's the same way that, like, This Is 40, which I didn't see, I gotta admit, because I had no interest in it. I feel like a lot of the criticism about it involved, like, this is just Judd Apatow and his family. We're just watching his family hanging out. Like, there was this extra level of entertainment the movie had to reach to justify, why are we watching a movie where Judd Apatow's just casting his kids in it? And this is the same way with After Earth. Like,
yeah.
Jaden Smith has to reach it up to a high enough level where we're like, oh, he does deserve to have a movie built around him beyond the fact that his dad is Will Smith. And
he's
he fails
the only guy
who
could pull this mission off.
Yeah. I think...
Wait, who?
Jaden Smith.
what mission?
The mission of being charismatic.
Yeah, but apparently he couldn't.
No.
So anyway...
Elliot, digging into Jaden Smith already. Chill out, bro.
Come
sheep
on,
those
he's
claws,
just a kid.
Kitty.
Look,
he smells fear and he attacks.
I can be both. I'm going to give him some constructive criticism. Jaden,
sure. Get more charismatic.
Maybe you
stop
need to
focus your ability points in future experience games on
charisma
stat
and not on dexterity, which you're very good at.
Clearly, he outruns CGI gorillas and
Let's
stuff.
Let's give
in
your
this.
Classic shit sandwich, as Stuart described it. You're very good. Okay, you're in great shape, Jaden, and I believed that you were running around and being fast. You're not
okay,
that charismatic.
Thank you for that comment, but
and you're
explain.
Not. You're not. Well, I think you need to express to us the likability that the other people who cast you in this see within you.
I'm hearing the words you're saying, but you're not making me understand.
You're kind
that.
Of I'm a mealy mouth, petulant sort of person.
I'm thinking maybe like smile once during the movie or show us a moment of humor or playfulness. The same thing that has made your dad a billion-dollar movie star.
So I could make a couple of jokes, say things like, that wasn't cool, and you don't got it, dude, etc.
Exactly. Yeah, great stuff, Shane. And now the other end of it, you're a fine-looking boy, and you'll grow up to a handsome man.
Thanks.
Yeah.
So plenty of butt shots of me in this movie, right?
Oh, that was the other thing, is it seemed like M. Night Shyamalan was being paid by the butt shot. There's a lot of shots from below.
Which, by the way...
Not,
directors, that works.
That's a bad deal.
In certain movies.
Yeah.
If you're making
the bikini car wash, that's a great way to be paid.
Yeah. Or you're making, if you're Tinto Brass, then yes, pay him by the
if
butt
you're
shot.
Making the movie Cheeky, which is about butts.
Then yes, you'll make a lot off it. But if you're making an action that's adventure sci-fi film.
Wait. You can make an adventure sci-fi film that's also about butts, Elliot.
Yeah, but it would be like a porn parody, like Flesh Gordon or something like that. You can't make a serious science fiction movie that is about butts.
Okay.
Yeah. Unless it's called like...
Barbarella.
Like Butt Invasion or something, and there's aliens. Sure. Except that's basically just
Dreamcatcher.
Think about how much better
that's
that movie would have done.
That's a pretty serious sci-fi movie.
It was called Butt Invasion. Or Butt Invaders.
I mean, I certainly would have, like, my expectations would be where they should be, rather than me being like, oh, I'm seeing this high-class adaptation of Stephen King. Oh, wait, hold on, it's about butt weasels.
It's amazing that one man's adaptations can, I guess this is the way it is for many authors, but can encompass everything from The Shining to Dreamcatcher.
And be pretty accurate to the source material, to be honest with you.
So anyway, they're on this spaceship. They go into an asteroid
shit.
Field.
We haven't gotten to the crash yet.
No, they're on. I'll go fast. They're in a spaceship. They go through an asteroid field, and Will Smith is like, "Let's avoid this asteroid field." And the guys,
couldn't understand what anybody was saying.
The co-pilots are. This is the mumbliest, lowest mixed part of the movie. He's saying, "Let's go through this. Let's avoid this asteroid field." And the co-pilots are like, "We're cool." Asteroids hit the space shuttle. They mumble techno jargon to each other for like 1,000 minutes. Mm-hmm. It's really takes forever. So, short story short. Long story short, the spaceship crashes.
Short story long.
Short story long. So the gift of the Magi is a tale. I'll tell you over 3 hours.
Let me explain first the reference of the Magi. The Magi were the three wise men who...
who visited the Christ child.
Now, the Christ child is... Now, there's a Messiah character in many different...
Now, a child is a young version of a human, a youngling you might know them as. Humans are the main bipedal ape simian descended inhabitants of Earth.
Let me back up. The Big Bang.
Nothing's bigger. Nothing's bangier than the Big Bang, coming soon to a universe near you.
And speaking of Big Bangs, the ship crashes.
The ship crashes. Everyone on it seems to have been killed except for Jaden and Will. Will has had a bad arterial break to his leg, and he's spurting blood. They got to get out of there fast. Jaden has to get their beacon is broken, their emergency beacon. He's got to get to the tail end of the ship all the way, like a mile away through jungle, to
100 kilometers.
Is it 100 kilometers?
Yes.
Oh, okay, 100 kilometers away. He's got to access that beacon, but they're on Earth in the future. Somehow the atmosphere has changed somehow that makes it harder for people to breathe, and he only has so many...
So the atmosphere changed, or just humans have evolved differently.
Yeah.
It's been a while, right?
Hey, look, it's been 1,000 years. People are not going to evolve away from breathing oxygen in 1,000 years.
Yeah, but if your body gets used to breathing at a slightly different type of, like, amount of of oxygen.
Point is, Jane Smith has these cookies that, like, basically, they look like, he has these like the pill boxes that, like, birth control
He has these
in.
Little discs that look like round Hamantaschen, where they look like the, like, old people cookies that have raspberry, like, gel on the top.
Yeah.
And he has to take one. He has
prune
four.
Jam.
He drinks some, like, fucking magic liquid out of them makes him be able to breathe.
He drinks breathing elixir out of them, and he only has four.
That's 4 days of grandma cookies.
That means it's going to take him that much to get to where the beacon is. But, actually, some of them were broken. He doesn't have four, but he doesn't tell his dad that because he wants to go on this mission and prove himself. Yeah. So his dad watches him through a magic backpack and communicates with him to give him advice. He takes his dad's collapsible double-pointed spear, you know, saber.
Yeah.
So he's like a regular Ray Park Darth Maul with his double-edged thingamabob weapon. And right off the bat, he goes in and angers some baboons for no reason. His dad is yelling at him, "Stand down!" And instead, he throws a rock at a baboon. He gets chased by them.
Yeah, well, let's back up and say that.
What's to back up to?
Well, no, we just point out that Jaden Smith
is the son of Will Smith. Jaden Smith, megastar.
Jaden Smith's journey in this movie is that he needs to learn to not feel fear.
He needs to learn to grow up and not feel his fear. And we eventually learn that. Over time, we learn through flashbacks that there's some backstory to them.
Yeah.
That Will Smith had an older daughter, Jaden Smith's older sister, Katai's older sister.
Mm-hmm.
Cypher Rage had this daughter. And she was killed because dad, Cypher, was away on a mission when an Ursa attacked their house. And she put Jaden...
home invasion.
She put Jaden into some kind of globe for growing plants, and so that his pheromones wouldn't get out.
She
and
put
the Ursa
him under
smell
a dome.
She put him. It was like under the dome. If the dome was big enough to hold one child, and it protected you from Ursas.
Yeah.
So she was killed.
Which, presumably
so
under Cypherina, the dome. That dome protects her.
So is killed.
So Cypher blames himself for his daughter being dead, and blames Jaden a little bit. Although, what was Jaden supposed to do? He's a little kid.
Yeah.
Like,
is
a 5 or 6 year old supposed to fight off an Ursa? I don't think so.
Yeah, he's going to ghost all over the place. I don't think so.
But more important, Jaden blames himself for his sister's death, and he needs to get over that and realize that he needs to. That it was okay for him to feel fear then, but now he shouldn't, or some stuff. So, anyway, that's his arc, his life goal, mission.
But that translates him to acting erratic and crazy and like a coward for most of the movie.
And it's one of those things where, like, teenagers act really erratic and they get mad out of nowhere and stuff. If that was what they're playing up, I'd be like, this is pretty realistic. Like, if I had been 15 and I was on a plan and I had to get somewhere, I'd probably act out and get mad and frustrated. But instead, he just comes off as, like, petulant and doing stupid shit. Like, a baboon's right there. Why'd you throw a rock at him? 100 baboons come out and chase him. He runs into a river. He gets a leech on him that makes him all puffy. He's got to inject some magic medicine into him that takes away leech puffiness.
Yeah.
And it turns out that because of something that we did to the Earth, every night it gets freezing cold, which doesn't square with the fact that he's in this lush kind of Pacific Northwest rainforest.
Yeah, like temperate forest land.
With full of baboons and eagles and stuff.
And old growth trees.
So how does it work? We don't know. Nobody did a lot of ecology.
I mean, we get one scene of like the plants curling up a little bit, but I don't think that.
That scene would have been 100 times better if the plants had been like Looney Tunes plants, like, and they'd be like, exactly, and curling up, and like putting nightcaps on. Yeah. Good night, tree. Good night, fern. Like someone pulls a chain that turns the sun off.
Yeah, sure. Like one plant pulls itself down and it wraps up like a shade on a window.
Yeah, yeah. And there's like a mushroom that folds into a tree like a Murphy bed. That would be hilarious. And then they all sing some song from the Warner Brothers song library that they're trying to promote. You know, yeah. I only have eyes for you or something like that. I only have eyes for you. There you go. That's the song that Mr. Freeze would sing.
That should have been in the movie we just watched, shouldn't it have been?
That was Mr. Freeze's first dance song at his wedding, was I Only Have Eyes for You.
He's a romantic guy.
He's trying to unfreeze his wife.
No, I know.
I don't know why he just doesn't stick her in a microwave.
And he liked ice buns even before because of his name.
Yeah. His name, Carl Freeze.
So, yeah, that happened.
Did anyone ever make a joke about a movie called They Call Me Mr. Freeze?
Well, now you did.
Now they did. So it's been done. Anyway, but... One night when he gets to a hot zone, which is one of the bullshit warm areas the movie made up so that Jaden Smith doesn't freeze to death, and he just runs to him at night.
Video game checkpoints.
Yeah. His father tells him the story when he learned how to ghost, which was he was fighting an Ursa and they fell into a river and he was about to drown and he realized he shouldn't be scared and he didn't and he won.
You told that story much more excitingly than Will Smith did in the movie we just watched.
Most of that story is communicated. Do we get a flashback? No. Do we visualize any of this? No. We see Will Smith literally just kind of lackadaisically just sitting there in a monotone talking to the camera.
Yeah.
Just really slowly telling the story.
And this is a moment to say that, like, Will Smith, one of the most charismatic movie stars
ever.
Of the
I would say ever.
Yeah.
I would say you drop Will Smith into the 30s or the 40s, and he would have been just as successful. Like, incredibly charismatic, incredibly likable, talented. He's a double threat. He can dance. Sing, act, with us three.
But he seems to have decided, like, oh, I don't want to do that anymore. What I want to do is to not be any of those things.
He's stretching by being serious here.
Yeah.
And he's playing kind of this martinet drill sergeant, you know, emotionless fellow who he's shut himself off from fear, but does that mean he's also shut himself off from love?
But also, I feel like there are actors out there.
I mean, there's no love interest in this movie, right?
There's his wife. He has a wife.
But she's on a different planet.
And Jaden Smith has a love interest, a big vulture that saves him.
Sure, his vulture buddy.
Or it's a condor, I guess. Yeah.
But there are actors out there.
His vulture buddy, Volturo. Yeah.
They're actors who can be like tough and emotionless and still have a lot of charisma. And I feel Will Smith just doesn't seem to know
how to do that.
Okay, Tommy Lee Jones. Yeah, name exactly. Two.
Josh Billy Bob Thornton.
Okay, that's three. name four.
Shit, I don't know. I guess you're right, Ellie.
Clint Eastwood, maybe?
Okay, Clint Eastwood, too. Yeah, okay. You're right. A lot of people can do it. And Will Smith is playing against his strengths here and not in a way that helps him.
And do you think that was a conscious choice on his part so that he could give his son more of the spotlight?
I think it was, probably, but
I think so.
Jaden is not picking up the slack.
I think that's definitely why he took a passive role in the movie, where Will Smith spends most of the movie sitting down and talking to his son through a camera.
While he's about to pass out from blood loss.
That's the thing.
Why could they have not given his computer like a sassy voice to add a little bit of levity to this
voice,
movie?
Any voice. So Will Smith also takes a drug that makes him drowsy because he's dying of blood loss. But it means that you have a movie in which the biggest star in the movie, Will Smith, it's a boring movie and he can barely stay awake. Like, the star of the movie is barely fighting enough to stay awake through his film, you know? Yeah. Anyway, so eventually he learns the truth that Katai doesn't have enough breath cookies to get to where he's going. He needs four. He needs 3.5 and he only has 2 left. So he says, abort the mission, abort. But Katai is on the top of a cliff and they have an argument about, was I supposed to save my sister? I was just a kid and that kind of thing. You were never there for us. And the argument
valuable breath cookies
comes out of nowhere and he's wasting breath cookie time. And so he says, I'm going to finish the mission. The only way to do it, to jump down from this cliff instead of hiking down, he can save himself 1.5 breath cookies by the sky jump.
Yeah, he's going to base jump with a Rocky the Flying Squirrel suit on.
Because his multi-suit, which he's wearing, is this magic leather suit that does whatever he needs, and it changes color a bunch of times for seemingly no reason. Has
camouflage.
It has flying squirrel
to
flaps.
Camouflage him from the blind monster that smells fear.
So it should. He should have a suit that releases a pheromone.
A distracting pheromone. That makes perfect sense.
Like for a sexy lady Ursa. So the Ursa falls in love with him and wants to bring him flowers and chocolates.
Yeah. Puts on a hat and a bow tie. Yeah. Checks himself out in the mirror.
Yawn. Puts its claw around his shoulder. Oh, fresh.
He keeps trying to sneak away, and it keeps dragging him back.
Again, another way this movie would have been better if it turned into a Looney Tune. If this movie, instead of starring Will Smith and Jaden Smith, had starred Bugs Bunny and, like Bert Bunny, his son, it would have been way better.
Bert Bunny, come on.
What's a better name for his son?
I don't know.
His dad, his name is Bugs. You don't want to fight that.
That's true.
Bugs Jr.? BJ Bunny. There you go, BJ Bunny.
All right.
I think that character probably exists.
Well, that's right? PJ Funny Bunny exists.
Sure.
Anyway, so he sky jumps down, but he's attacked, which just means floating through the air. He's attacked by a giant condor, which Stuart made the point that this is ridiculous, that the kid who's using his sky suit for the first time is more maneuverable than the bird that evolved to fly on this planet. But he gets caught. He gets caught and he wakes up in a nest full of little cute baby birds that's being attacked by saber-toothed tigers. And he uses his double-edged spear to fight off the tigers. Too late. All the birds have been killed and the condor,
he's not
grief-stricken.
He's a baby condor person.
I wish his line that would have been like, I'm really not a cat person. I'm allergic to cats. Allergic to death. And then throws the cat overboard or something.
Yeah, but the condor sheds condor tears over its fallen kids.
Yeah.
It's pretty sad.
It's really sad. He goes to a cave. He sleeps next to a magma river. He sees the Lascaux cave paintings or some kind of mammoth cave paintings because those have been preserved excellently.
And a flying snake.
And a flying snake that
regular eats. Regular Quetzalcoatl.
He doesn't have any feathers. We see no other remnants of Earth. And as Stuart points out, there's no reason why this movie had to take place
on
Earth.
Why does it have to be on Earth?
The
title's After Earth.
Any fucking planet. Like, it's like, oh, it's just a planet that's a hostile planet.
So they could do lazy animal design and just be like,
basically,
let's take a snake, but make it flap around.
We'll make a bird, but it's big. Here's a baboon, but it looks a little different.
Bigger
it's
baboon.
Got a bunch of buddies. Normally, baboons only travel in packs of 10. These ones travel in packs of 20.
That's how you know it's Earth in the future. They should have called this Planet Fear and not have it set on Earth.
Perfect.
Better title? Better planet.
She called it Planet Terror.
But you're right.
Robert Rodriguez.
It's not like they used any actual animals in the movie. It's all CGI.
It's all
Even
CGI.
The baby condor monsters are CGI.
Jaden Smith might be CGI. They used a real Ursa, though.
Oh, okay. Oh, interesting. Okay.
Yeah. So anyway, he gets out of there. He's running out of capsules. He's plotting his course. He gets to a river. He builds a raft. He's like a regular Huckleberry Finn. He's going down the river. He falls asleep, and he has a dream of his sister. And his sister tells him,
practical special effects, though, right?
And this is all practical special effects, by which we mean the actress playing his sister is just sitting there.
Yeah.
And she tells him basically to, like, stop being mad and, like, stop being afraid, that kind of
shit. Stop being such a puss.
It's a real, it's a real, like, Obi-Wan just telling Luke to do this stuff moment, except stupid. And you know it's a dream because it's not really a ghost, except she's going, wake up, Katai, wake up. And he won't wake up. And then she gives him a monster face for a moment where she's got like a slash and blood on her face. And he wakes up and it's like
it's like a PG rated Large Marge.
I mean, Large Marge was rated PG.
Really? I thought she was terrifying.
I thought
that was rated X for sure.
Yeah, for sex. I watched that scene on YouTube recently again from Pee Wee's Big Adventure. And when I was a kid, I couldn't watch it.
Yeah.
I covered my eyes every time just knowing it was – can I watch the movie all the time? I loved it. But just knowing it was coming, I was like, got to cover my eyes now. I don't want to see Large Marge. And I watched it again. It is the goofiest.
It's so goofy.
Like, it's two claymation cartoon eyes and a big mouth, and you hear like, like, it's the silliest thing. And as a kid
– well, so surprising.
It's surprising.
It's out of
nowhere. But once you know it's coming – but as a kid, it was right up there with that one ghost in Ghostbusters who's driving a cab and looks like a grosser
skeleton
version of the Crypt Keeper.
Yeah, he's like a decaying corpse.
Those were the two things
when
I was a kid.
The Crypt Keeper's brother.
His less attractive, less charismatic brother. Yeah.
He couldn't cut it in the pictures.
Harold's
Gary Crypt Keeper.
Gary Yeah, I drive a cab. Yeah, that's my brother who does the TV show and the comics and the movies. He's a real big shot in the family. I think he goes, he laugh, whatever.
Just because he comes up with puns. I can come up with puns.
Yeah.
Oh, looks like you lost your head. Ha 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 ha.
We're driving into a dead end. Yeah, forget whatever. About it. Okay, are you going to tip me or what? Thanks for nothing, pal. Taxi, taxi here. Who wants a taxi? Oh, did I forget to mention she's also riding a pedicab.
Where are you going? Brooklyn, I'm not going there.
I'm not taking you to Brooklyn. Forget about it. I'm dead. I'm not stupid. I wouldn't be caught dead over there. Get it? Pun. Goodbye.
Voiced by Sylvester Stallone.
Yeah.
Young Sylvester Stallone.
Young Sylvester Stallone. Yeah. Yep.
Not John Cassier. In this case, Sylvester Stallone is voicing the brother of the Crypt Keeper.
The brother
who doesn't have a TV show. Slumber. I don't know why I have someone voicing him.
Well, they started with the brother and then they worked their way towards the host.
I got you.
A lot of writers will do that when they're creating a character. They'll say, before I get started on my main character, what will help me shape him? Well, what's his brother like? Mm-hmm. I think that's how J.R.R. Tolkien wrote his main books. What's Bilbo's brother like?
Bilbo.
What's Sal Baggins like?
Why you went with Bilbo and not Dildo, the obvious joke.
Yeah, that is obvious.
So obvious. Too obvious. Even as a kid, the first time I read The Hobbit, I made that joke to myself and laughed.
That when I read Board of the Rings, the Lord of the Rings parody from the National Lampoon, and they called him Dildo, I said, really, you could do better than that. Come on. Okay, so Katai's ghost sister wakes him up. It's getting cold out. Oh no, he can't escape it. It's freezing. He passes out from breath coldness or something.
Yeah.
Luckily.
Covered in a sheen of frost.
Which was my favorite line Stuart had. Was, he saw him and he goes, oh, he's an old man now. Because he has white frost in his hair.
He had frosted tips.
The condor that turns out saves him, drags him to his nest, and then dies, covering him with his body to keep him warm.
Because that's the way birds work. If you do a bird a favor,
when birds freeze to death, they stay dead, Dan.
Yeah.
If you do a bird a favor, he'll never forget, and he'll help you in your hour of need.
You can't thaw out a dead bird and just flies away. No, but birds have a real code of ethics.
Yeah.
If you do a bird a favor, they'll do you one in return. But, and always remember this, never ask a bird for a favor or accept a gift or offering, for then you will owe them, and they will come back for repayment when you least expect it.
Sure. What you thought was your own baby is just a baby condor.
They stole my baby and replaced it with a condor.
Now you touch that baby condor with some cold iron.
And he'll tell you his true name. That gives you power over him. Really, when a bird asks you for a favor, it's usually like, hey, can you hand me that vole? Yeah, sure. Here you go, bird. Our pact is over. Sure. Your debt has been repaid. Can you put peanut butter in this pine cone and then put seed on it? Yeah, sure.
You got any suet? Anywhere?
Yeah, here you go. Thank you. Your eternal blood legacy is now fulfilled. Anyway, so...
So, in any other movie, I feel like the hero, after being saved by this giant condor who gives its life for his, the hero would do something to remember that bird.
Bury the bird,
he
perhaps?
He does nothing.
He just walks away.
He shakes it a little bit, and he's like, oh, okay, whatever.
He's like,
he does it like he should have taken a feather or something. Or
at least said thank you. Like, he just shakes
when
and
they're
like,
flying away, he should look into the stars, and the stars form the face of the condor.
And then he's a single tear. Sure. But it's like he just nudges it to be like, hey, buddy, time for school, wake up. Yeah. Oh, you're dead? I guess I'll keep going then. And it doesn't even say thanks.
Yeah. Again, not
even,
playing into
take a bite out of it.
Yeah. I will honor you, my winged friend, and your sacrifice.
You'll live on
devouring its hearth.
The legend of the condor friend. And ever shall man and condor be allies. Mm-hmm. You have.
And that was how the Mandor became one.
You have bought a pledge of friendship with your blood. So he goes out, he finds the tail end of the spaceship, he finds the beacon, but it's not working. There's some ionic sphere layer of dust bullshit. So he has to get to the top of a volcano for the beacon to work.
He's just like running by magma. He's like running by. I don't know why his sneakers aren't melting, but he's fine.
And the egg that Ursa was in is broken. And we've already seen the other Rangers who were on the spaceship, who I guess survived and walked away and just left Will and Jaden Smith to die, have been killed by the Ursa and impaled on trees. The Ursa's signature move.
Sure.
Now the Ursa,
that's his finishing move.
Now the Ursa follows Jaden up this volcano, which is not good because there's no trees there. What's the Ursa going to do? Carry the dead body back down, stick it on a tree? I guess so. And
maybe
Jaden,
he'll bring his own tree. He's pretty big.
Yeah, I guess so. He can carry a tree. So the Ursa's chasing him. He's trying to get to the top. They fight a lot.
So he has to get to the top of a volcano to set off the beacon, right?
Yes.
But he's screwed because after he sets off the beacon, his condor buddy's already dead, so he can't leave when the volcano erupts.
That doesn't seem to be a problem. The movie kind of ignores that. The bigger issue is that an Ursa is trying to kill him, and he's still afraid, so the Ursa can smell him. And it's like, Ursa.
It's like Naked Gun, The Smell of Fear.
Wasn't that Naked Gun 2.5?
Yeah, I don't know.
What was 33 and a third?
I think that was it.
Didn't have a subtitle?
Listeners, write in and tell us what the subtitle is.
It was like Naked Gun 33 and a third, the one with Anna Nicole Smith in it.
IMDb-ing it.
So the last funny one of these.
At the last minute, as they're fighting on a volcano, ash falling all around them, and I assume a tasteful reference to Schindler's List, suddenly Jaden remembers his father's words of advice and instantly is able to control his fear, and his pheromones, I guess, suck back into his pores.
He's ghosting the shit out of things.
Ghosting like crazy, and the Ursa's like, I can't see you. Where are you? Well, he doesn't talk, but you can tell he's trying to find Jaden, and Jaden's just slashing the crap out of him with his double bladed super sword.
Can I just take a moment to say, like, this is what I hate the most about this. What I maybe hate the most about this movie is, like, it's so clearly like, okay, we're gonna make a movie where the theme is overcoming fear. So we're going
to
make this.
Because when you're a kid, you're afraid of everything.
Yeah.
And when you grow up, you learn to not be afraid of anything.
Yeah. You learn that fear is the mind killer, feels the little death within us all.
But we're going to do this in
total
oblivion. We're going to do this in the.
You will let the fear pass through you. You will go into it and look behind you and see that nothing is left, only you.
Otherwise, you get stabbed with a gamja bar and you're totally toast.
And it's like the poison goes in and you're dead. You're double dog dead.
But we're going to do this.
Unless you're the Mod Dib.
Jesus Christ. We're going to do this in the most obvious way. We're going to do this in the most obvious way by creating this creature that smells fear. But it's so, like, it only makes sense as a metaphor in a movie. Like, it's so illogical in real life. Like, the aliens created this monster that can smell fear, but also doesn't have eyes, I guess.
It's a total design flaw.
Like, it can't just, like, as a backup, it can just, like, see where Jane Smith is.
It's continuing the tradition of M. Night Shyamalan aliens having a very clear design weakness.
Yeah, like being allergic to water?
Yes, and then dropping them on a planet that's covered in water.
Yeah. Well,
even
the
very atmosphere should melt them to dust.
To be fair, that was an act of God.
Yeah,
and God is, if nothing, illogical.
I'm just saying, make your metaphorical creatures a little more subtle.
The real problem with the movie, I mean, aside from it being, well, let's just say he conquers his fear, he sets off the beacon, then he gets saved.
Yeah,
the end.
Everyone's happy,
and Jaden Smith gets one of three or four joke lines where he goes, "I want to do mom's job." At the end.
Which
anyway,
we don't know what it is.
And they go
any
home.
Way you want it, that's the way you need. Right? That's right.
Yeah. Yeah.
So they win in the end. But and he saves the day. But the real flaw in this movie, aside from it being super boring and the lead actor not having much charisma, certainly at this stage in his performing career to carry an entire movie, and it being very unimaginative and things like that, is that they mentioned in the beginning a bunch of aliens made monsters to fight us. And those aliens, we never see them. They never show up. We never find out what happened in the war with them. Is that still going on? Like, what's happening? It's like if you were doing a story about the atomic bomb, and it was like, by the way, we were fighting Nazis in World War II, so we made an atomic bomb. Flash forward 60 years later, and you'd be like, wait, but what about what happened to the war you were just telling me about? Is that still happening?
And before people write in to tell us, we saw on Wikipedia that this was supposed to be the first of a trilogy. We understand that maybe that would be developed later, but each movie has to stand on its own.
You can't take it for granted that this one mention of something is going to be okay. And it's not like a Star Wars mention where in the first movie they'll mention stuff. Well, like in the first movie,
I'm laughing at Dan's defense already.
I'm sick of you people.
This is not a time code situation. Was that what that movie was called? In time.
Time Code was the
is that four quadrant movie? Yeah. Right? No, it's not like
it appealed to all four quadrants.
People like looking at four screens at once.
Young people, old people,
people who like
horny people,
bullshit art movies that don't work. You get to decide
people.
What story to follow. No, you do that. Make the movie for me.
I actually saw it. Mike Figgis. I liked it. Okay.
Yeah, Figgis pudding. They call him. But here in Star Wars, they say, "Oh, my dad fought in the Clone Wars," and you don't need to know more about it. It's just like backstory. Here, I think they might have been going for some of that here in a way that, like, you're hinting at a wider universe that exists around the story. But it's such a major thing that humans are in a war with aliens to never have it have much to do with the rest of the movie is unless, like, they're bringing this Ursa egg somewhere, and I clearly missed what the mission was. Are they delivering it somewhere so they can discover a way to kill Ursas? Like,
yeah, the
big
first 20
spears seem to do it pretty well.
first 20 minutes of the movie, I couldn't understand anything anybody said.
Yeah, the weird like if you're gonna have was a,
and the mumbling,
you're gonna have a crazy mumbling accent. Don't have a bunch of loud beeps going off from your weird organic computer console.
Yeah,
and but there's. I have to admit that there are a few scenes that are well directed in this from a camera viewpoint point of view.
Let's move on to final judgments about whether this was a good bad movie, a bad movie, or movie you kind of liked. Elliot, you're already there. What are
okay,
you
it's a bad movie. There's a couple moments where there are camera moves that I like a lot, but literally like two or three of those where there's like just some neat uses of the camera. But otherwise, it's just a lot of watching Jaden Smith, usually from a butt-focused point of view, mm-hmm. like crawling through jungle, getting focused. Mad at things, and fighting animals that don't look real, and not overcoming fear, and his dad, meanwhile, sitting in a spaceship 100 kilometers away, just kind of talking in a monotone to nobody.
Yeah,
it really doesn't... It doesn't. I can see how this could be a really good movie, but there's no sense of life to it.
Yeah, I'm going to say bad movie. I'll just say boring and mumbly.
The old B&M combo.
Stuart, what do you have to say?
Yeah, I mean, it's a bad movie for the B&M reasons alone. I mean, it kind of feels like, structure-wise, it's kind of like The Gray, but it doesn't have the impact of Liam Neeson fighting wolves.
If you told me that there was a movie about a plane crash where a bunch of guys are being picked off by wolves, and there's a movie about a spaceship crash where a kid has to prove himself courageous by fighting a monster alien. Like, I'd want to see the second one more, but yeah. The first one is marginally better. I didn't love The Gray. I found it kind of boring, too. But,
I think it's a design flaw in this type of movie.
But they pull it off a lot. But there are good movies where people are at risk from the elements, and there's, like, an animal or something chasing them, you know? You can do that movie.
Animal, a bounty hunter.
Anything. It's the old, maybe it's Toshiro Mifune and Hell in the Pacific. Sure. It's a very simple story, and so it sucks when you see it screwed up this badly, you know.
So let's move on.
How were those final judgments, Dan?
They're perfect.
Satisfactory.
How do you judge? This is the new segment, Final Judgments, Judgments.
You get a 98.
98, okay.
No, it's, were those good judgments? Were they bad judgments? Were they judgments you kind of disagree with, Dan?
Good judgments.
Room for improvement.
A plus all around.
All right. So
extra credit for being awesome.
On. Quickly, I want to say this podcast, I believe, is going to come out on the 30th. So there's not a lot of time, but I just want to reiterate.
Happy Thanksgiving.
I want to reiterate that the
Happy Hanukkah
House Cat music video contest.
You got two more days.
Last day is December the 1st.
One day. What time are you accepting them by on December the 1st?
I don't know.
Evening?
I'm not really going to be much of a, like, whatever. Just get them in.
But you're a stickler. They got to be in by December 1st.
I'm not going to be a stickler. By December 1st. But
December 1st. By midnight, December 2nd. Those videos better be in, or you are shit out of luck.
Rawr.
Thanks, House Cat.
So let's
House Cop.
Let's quickly go through a few letters.
Just a few letters, not a lot of time for a lot of letters. Do it fast, but make it last. Letters for us. Letters from you, letters from all for a little bit of time, not a lot. Let's do it quickly, just a quickie, some letters real quick, Dan.
This letter is from Trevor, last name withheld. It's titled, Five Easy Pieces, Cinematic Geographical Epiphany. Dear Floppers, I've started listening to your podcast after the gently honorable internet judge John Hodgman recommended it so highly. I
when he said, don't listen to it?
No, he was very positive.
Oh, that was nice of him. He's a good guy.
I wanted to share a moment of cinematic geographical epiphany with you and inquire if you've ever had a similar experience. I first saw what I have thought of as a masterpiece of 70s drama, Five Easy Pieces, around 1988 as a scratched-up VHS rental. And completely loved it. I'm old. As I've grown older and frailer, subsequent viewings have only enriched it for me.
The movie has become too intense, and I worry my bones will break if I watch it.
Watching the movie a few months ago, I realized, like seeing something for the first time, that the movie begins in Bakersfield, California. The scene where Jack Nicholson plays the piano on the back of the moving truck was filmed on or near the I-5, the least pleasant stretch of interstate anywhere in the U.S., and the closest thing to a Road Warrior theme park one will ever experience.
Unless you go to that Doomsday Con or whatever that is that people do.
Burning
Man? No.
It's hard to.
That's Wicker Man Con.
It's hard to explain this if you're unfamiliar with these terrible places, as many Californians are. What? I don't. all of it. It's like realizing Casablanca takes place in, I don't know, the East Coast equivalent of Bakersfield. Do you have a post-apocalyptic hellscape of sunblasted strip malls and trailer parks populated by hyper-conservative meth addicts who live on disability and condemn the government? I'm sorry, beloved Bakersfield friends, but you know it's true. It blew my mind, and yet only made me appreciate the movie even more, as it's grounded in a pedestrian reality I've seen and touched and smelled so many times. Genius. Have all, some, or none of you had a similar experience, and would you move to Bakersfield? Trevor, last name without. Well, I mean, obviously, I'm not.
Fucking tourist board of Bakersfield?
Well, come to Bakersfield. It sucks. Move here and make it better.
Mm-hmm.
Thanks for those kind words.
Thanks for writing in, Trevor, about your Bakersfield experience. I've never been there. I will say that I've had experiences, certainly, where I've watched a movie and it's felt like or reminded me of places I've been. Like Midnight in Paris, the recent Woody Allen movie, a lot of it was shot at places I had been not too long before when I took my first trip to Paris. So it felt like Woody Allen had been stalking me and my wife on our vacation, which was a little weird. But one that hits me a lot when I see it is the movie The Landlord, which I really love and is set in the neighborhood I live in, Park Slope, and was shot there on location in the late 60s. And like I've walked by the house that it was shot at many times. But what really hit me was when I saw in the background of a shot a sign for Coca-Cola that up until very recently, about a year or two ago, was still on the front of a pizzeria in Park Slope. And so seeing it, it really drove home to me, like, I know exactly what block they're on right now. Like, I know exactly that corner. And it really hit hard, you know?
This is kind of a similar Bakersfield hellscape. I remember my wife and I actually went to a...
Speaking of hellscapes, my wife...
My wife and I went to a...
Wow, I hope she doesn't listen to this one, Dan.
We went to a horrific, horrific, unpleasant strip club near the... What is it? The Costco? Do you know what I'm talking about, Stuart?
Yeah. The one over in Sunset Park.
Yeah.
Oh, this is in New York.
It's like... Just the seediest place you could imagine. And then...
And this was your anniversary gift?
Yes. Yeah, that was what it was. No, it was just a regular Sunday night. But then years later on the television show Louie, if you've seen the episode where Robin Williams and Louis C.K. are the only two people at this agent's funeral.
Spoiler alert.
They go to a strip club where he was apparently beloved. That was the strip club, this very seedy place. And it's like, yep, you found the perfect place for this horrible guy to have been a beloved regular.
I had a Louis experience like that because there's an episode where he meets Parker Posey and they go on a date. And he meets her at a bookstore where the exterior, part of it, they shot it to make it look like it was in Manhattan. But the interior and the immediate exterior are very clearly community books, also in Park Slope on 7th Avenue, which I've been in many, many times. So it was like, I know that bookstore. I've never seen Parker Posey working there. This, wait a minute, hold on a second.
Bullshit.
This TV show's lying to me. Stuart, what about you?
I have never been into community books. I don't read a lot of books.
No, I mean, anywhere.
More of a calendar guy.
Yeah. Like hot babes on Ferraris is what we're
Yeah, hot
about.
Babes on Ferraris.
If it's a hot babe
cute
with,
puppies,
with a gun
life-size,
or on a car hood. Life-size.
Yeah, when they're so small they can fit on the calendar page.
There's a... one of our coworkers has an animals calendar, and there's one where it's a horse eating hay, but the hay is like falling out of its mouth. So it looks like it's just this big glossy picture of a horse vomiting all over the place. I think it's hilarious.
So this...
Cue up another letter for us, Dan.
This letter is titled Bork, Bork, Bork.
Robert Bork, okay.
A delicious mixture of beef and pork. You can buy it at Fleischer's Deli in Park Slope, Brooklyn.
So many Park Slope plugs.
I know.
The letter
Read
goes...
Read Beg the Question by Bob Fingerman. Plenty of Park Slope pictures.
Uh-huh.
With that one episode, one issue of Local.
This is not the jabber back and forth. This is the part where we talk about letters.
Okay.
The letter goes, Dear Floophausa, you guys are a super duper. Barrel's ear, a head full off laughter,
okay,
may I
just
put
read it,
you,
can you just read
in
it
my
like,
ear holes.
Can you just read it like a normal person, please?
Yeah,
I know it's,
what
I,
it fucking says.
I see that it is spelled that way.
Leet, it has a big brain full off mafia knowledge, boot a teeny teeny moosa flusa.
I don't know what that means.
Stuart probably boinks all the chicks at the bikini car wash. The pert goy. Bork, bork, bork. Don is pleasant. That's it. De hurdy hurdy hur. invite me over sometime and to watch a movie.
So is this like a Swedish Chef or is this an Italian
character? I will prepare you guys a meal. Maybe a Flophouse, a house cat jamboree. Sincerely, SC. So that's from SC.
So that's your Swedish Chef, huh?
No, that's this guy's Swedish Chef.
That he wrote out phonetically. Well, thanks for writing in and for the compliments.
Yeah. I'm sorry if I seemed if I lost the thread
If it seemed like Dan was having a stroke while reading that letter. But I always did wonder what if the Swedish Chef was doing a Borat impression, and I guess that's what it would be.
Look,
I think it's interesting that of the Muppets we hear from the Swedish Chef and not Statler and Waldorf. Seem to be kindred spirits in a sense.
You think they would heckle our heckling or appreciate fellow hecklers?
Yeah, you never know.
Mm-hmm.
We never hear from New Zealand.
So this last letter I think that we have time for this evening is from Mark, last name withheld. It's titled Boy.
Oh, so it's a phantasm thing.
It says
it's either a phantasm or some girl's boobs fell out of her dress.
He goes, gentle flops. You guys have made passing reference to the classic 1978 horror flick Phantasm a bunch. I think most recently in the Paperboy episode, possibly later since
and
this
possibly
thing.
Later. You never know.
Please spend
you play a good game, Paperboy.
Please spend 10 to 15 minutes elaborating on this. Did anyone
Wait, was this a test prompt?
Did anyone like parts 3 or 4?
Yep.
Of course,
what about that time a mutant
Phantasm Oblivion?
What about that time a mutant version of Angus Scrim came out of a hole in the size and shape of a double pizza box in that girl's back? Fucked up, right? In
yeah,
short,
awesome.
More Phantasm, boys.
You write a good letter, boy, but now you die. What's that author's name?
Mark, last name with him.
Mark, thanks for writing in.
Yep.
Stuart, you're the biggest Phantasm fan, I feel.
I am what they call a fan in the biz. That's spelled with a PH.
Of course, yeah.
I was really happy to get to meet Don Cascarelli, director of Phantasm, and get an autograph on my Phantasm poster.
Yeah, at the late lamented 92
Y
Tribeca.
I said Don Cascarelli, right? Or did I say Dan Cascarelli?
It just sounded like Dan.
When
I think you were saying Don.
Don Cascarelli.
Stuart and I had a... Dan, were you with us when we went to that?
Yeah, I was there, man.
We saw the double feature of John Dies at the End and the original Phantasm.
And I got to stand nervously in line behind a couple of horror geeks getting Japanese VHS tapes autographed.
It was adorable to see how nervous Stuart was.
I was so excited.
In getting the chance to talk to Don Cascarelli.
Yeah.
But yeah, they're great movies.
What do you have to say about the sequels?
Yeah, I like all of them. It's interesting because the second one was filmed so long after the first, but it picks right up after the first one.
And with a different
actor.
With a different actor, yeah. And apparently, what is it? I think there was a rumor that originally Brad Pitt was up for that role to play Mike, but he got passed on. And
On? I'm so sorry.
How different would the world be if megastar Brad Pitt had Phantasm 2?
Well, more people would be aware of it, I guess.
Sure.
But Brad Pitt was also in Johnny Suede, and nobody watches that anymore. Mm-hmm. In Cool World.
I think Flophouse friend Alex Smith watches Johnny Suede quite a bit.
Well, nobody watches Cool World, even though Brad Pitt's in it.
Except I think I recommended that on the podcast.
Cool World? Really? It's a terrible movie.
I'm just trying to get you to say the title many more times.
Cool World. Hollywood, if Holly could.
Yeah.
Cool World, the end. One thing I'm going to mention that I like about Phantasm is that the sequels carry the story forward in terms of the spreading evil of the main villain. A lot of horror movies and franchises, they reset at the beginning of the next movie, and it's like everybody just forgot that there was a fucking maniac running around killing kids in the last movie.
Yeah.
But in Phantasm, this evil force is just emanating throughout the country at a greater and greater
almost
rate.
Almost to like an apocalyptic rate.
Well, they're pushing that premise too, and it gets into like this weird science fiction area where you're like, okay, well, the fourth one is basically like a Star Wars movie, sort of.
Sure. I mean, the first one already involves other planets with Jawas running around on them.
And tuning forks, Dan.
Mm-hmm.
So many tuning forks.
And different levels of spheres.
Yep.
So we've lost all of the non-Phantasm fans listening.
So thanks, Mark, for ruining our listenership. Should we move on, Dan?
Let's move on to the final
judgments.
Segment.
Okay, Stuart, was
this a good
episode?
Oh, God.
Or good?
We circle back around. We're going to have to do that whole thing again,
okay,
word for word.
After Earth.
So this is the last segment. It's where we make a recommendation of a movie that we liked for people to watch instead of After Earth. Stuart, what do you have to recommend?
I'm going
to
recommend a classic Stuart Wellington flophouse movie.
So get ready for something gross. Yeah.
I'm going to recommend the movie Bad Milo, currently streaming on video on demand from Time Warner Cable. Bad Milo, starring Ken Marino. It features, it's about a guy who has an ass demon that is triggered by stress that goes out and murders the targets or the causers of his stress. There's a lot of poop slash fart jokes. There's jokes about a demon crawling back up into his butt, and you get to see those. There's a lot of scenes of that. There's also a scene where this monster bites a dude's dick off. So, yep, I think that fulfills all the criteria of a Stewart movie.
All right.
Some good character actors.
Sure, thanks.
Okay, Dan?
I'm going to recommend a movie that I saw...
called Bad Milo.
...in the theater a couple weeks back by the name of Blue is the Warmest Color.
Oh, boy, we all know how Dan enjoyed this one.
Look, I decided to lean into the Purpozoid label.
I'm recommending a movie I really enjoyed. I think you will too. It's called Baby Dolls Behind Bars.
Yeah. I mean, everyone,
it's softcore.
You can find it on Cinemax on demand.
But it's a hard softcore. Anyway, Dan, continue. Blue is the Warmest Color.
I mean, the thing is, like, it's people have talked a lot about the sexual content. There is a lot of sexual content in the sense that there's a 7-minute long sex scene that is fully just like 7 minutes of sex, and it's done fairly explicitly, but like this is a 3-hour movie, so
really it's like a 1-second sex scene.
No, I'm just saying, like, sure. I'm saying that people have focused on this, but it's out of proportion with like the full content of what the movie is, which is about this woman's first love and the building of a first love and sort of the realization of who she is, and then unfortunately the falling apart of that, which I enjoyed the second half of the movie a little less just because it's a little more emotionally difficult. It's sad to
and
see
there's less sex
that fall apart. And there is less sex, so there's that too. But I thought it was great.
So you would recommend watching the first half and then watching it again?
Mm-hmm. Well, sitting down to it, you know, I was like, I like a lot of
art. Where is this going to go?
No, I like a lot of art films. I like a lot of foreign films. Do I want to watch a 3-hour French movie? And then once it started, like I was engaged and transported the whole time. So okay. it's a very good movie.
It's a fast 3 hours.
It's like the Godfather of lesbian love films. Yeah.
I don't love the very end for reasons that maybe I can get into on the Facebook page.
Don't spoil it.
So there's no spoilers, but that would be my only criticism.
Was it all a dream?
Yeah. It was an autistic boy's dream.
It was all a dream, turns and sees a woman in her bed. Or was it?
Mm-hmm. Or were they all characters inside of John Cusack's mind?
Yeah.
Or did the two characters have a face-off and shoot missile launchers at each other and explode the world?
Wait, they were inside of Pruitt Taylor Vance. Anyway, go on, Elliot.
A what?
He's correcting me not understanding that John Cusack isn't the star of Identity.
He is the star. He's not the head that all the characters are running around in.
But shouldn't the characters be running around in the head of the star of the movie?
No, because that's
the twist.
You'd expect that. But no. I'm going to recommend a noir movie from 1953 called 99 River Street. And I'm not... I don't know why that
was... It's a real fucking spectrum of movies tonight, guys.
Yeah, I'm not going to say that it's like the most amazing movie because I really liked it a lot and I thought it was really good. But there's, I think, a problem when you say like, I've found this little known gem and then people see it and they're like, that wasn't so amazing. Look, it's not going to blow your mind, but it's maybe one of the grimmest noirs that I've seen in a long time, and I'm kind of surprised I haven't heard about it for that reason. It's directed by, let me look it up, Phil Carlson, who also directed Kansas City.
Phil Collins?
No, yeah, Phil Collins, some of his off time from Genesis. Okay. Phil Carlson, who directed Kansas City Confidential, which is another one of those noir movies, and stars John Payne as a former boxer who lost the big fight and is now a cab driver stuck with a shrewish wife who thought she was marrying the future heavyweight champion of the world, but now is only married to a cab driver.
John Payne would be a good partner for Cypher Rage.
It is, except this is a real person's name. He is friends with an actress, and he finds out that his wife is cheating on him with a kind of small-time diamond crook who is not averse to killing women who know a little too much about his diamond thieving. And long story short, the taxi driver gets a murder pinned on him and has to find the guy who did it before the police find him. So it's a pretty classic kind of wrong man noir story, but it is so dark and so grim. And there's one scene where a character confesses a murder to another one that's so overwrought that it becomes like frighteningly grotesque in a way. And just the characters are so kind of mean and slimy in a way that even noir movies in the 50s usually held back from. So it just feels like grim in a way that they usually don't, in a way I liked a lot. It's shot really neat all at night, and the ending is so ridiculously upbeat and such a crazy change in tone that it almost feels sarcastic. Mm-hmm. Like they had to put a happy ending on this movie because it's a studio movie, but they went so far over the top that it's almost like the movie is daring you to reject that ending because the philosophy of the film up to that point has been so like brutally
what was the movie?
Dark.
You showed a movie like that at your closely watched films. Was that The End of the Old Dark House? What was that?
Ministry of Fear.
Ministry of Fear.
Ministry of Fear is a really good movie where Ray Milland is on the run and he's not sure why. Nazis are chasing him in England in the 40s and he's not sure why. And it's like this nightmare. This man is being chased and doesn't understand what's going on, and people are turning up dead when he goes to them for help. And it ends with this ridiculous joke about cake. And it's just like, wait, what?
Yeah. And all they have to do is a zippy like musical sting.
Like,
and then
it's the same with Ray Milland in The Uninvited, where he has just exorcised the murderous ghost of his girlfriend from the house, and it's really like tense. And then she goes, "That was close." And he turns to her and to the woman and goes, "You think that was close for you? That was almost my mother-in-law." The end. Like, for some reason, these movies had to end either on upbeat endings or jokes. But 99 River Street, it's a real tense little noir movie. Do I want to say a little known gem? Yeah, sure I do. And I hope you enjoy it.
So if somebody were to watch all three of these movies in one sitting,
Maybe do Blue's Warmest Color last. Yeah. Actually, you know what? I'd say do 99 River Street, then Blue is the Warmest Color, and then end it with some bad Milo. Cap it off with a butt demon to kind of wash out the taste of ruined romance and murder.
Yeah. Well, guys, I know you guys have a metal show to go to.
Yeah, so Ellie and I are going to go see some squealing guitars.
Masters of Thrash, 2013.
I don't think there's anything else to say. For the flop
But there's so much to say, Dan. Dan, I love you. Dan, I've been holding you back all this time.
Well, I got to sign off quick. For the flop house, I've been Dan McCoy.
We meant for each other.
I've been Dan McCoy.
Dan is the warmest color.
I was just going to keep waiting, let you keep pestering him for a while. I'm Stuart Wellington.
And I'm Elliot Kalin.
Good night, everyone.
That was a flop house.
Good night. Dan, no.
My favorite movie featuring Buster Poindexter.
More than Carpet
Not
Before, where
Scrooged.
Are you?
Okay, you guys are both right. I like this more. Or where's the one where he gets killed by a cat in the mouth? Tales from the Dark Side
cat
of the Movie.
Cat in the Mouth.
He gets cat in the mouth.
the superhero who kills crooks by shoving cats in their mouths?
Like a submarine sandwich situation.
Exactly.
A submarine cat witch.
Okay.
Submarine cat witch Everdeen.
What a powerful tribute to Subway sandwiches. Okay.